everyone, and welcome back to Once Upon a Timing, your podcast all about big spiders, little spiders. I forgot what I was gonna say. I had it all memorized. Damn it. Let me start over. Hey everyone, and welcome back to Once Upon a Timing, your podcast all about spider webs, child labor, and Blackbeard? Blackbeard's hot. I'm just gonna say it.
Listen, you're not wrong. I had the same kind of thing. I'm like, wait a minute. What's going on? What's happening right now? Why do I feel like this? What's going on?
Yes, I am Beth Elderkin. I'm joined as always by the lovely Abby. Abby, how are you doing other than slightly thinking about Blackbeard?
Horny for pirates? Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's not a change of pace for me. Just usually I keep it a little bit more concealed. I'm doing good, despite this episode being super odd. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to explain it. I don't think it was bad. I do think that the Wikipedia part where they were like, yeah, it was rated a 4.7 out of 5 was a strange overshoot. But I didn't like this episode as much as I thought I was going to.
I didn't either.
Okay, thank God.
No, you are not alone in that. In fact, I might be a little harsher on it than you. Or maybe you were just being a little bit reserved in case I was a fan, and now we can just get into it.
Yeah. No, I think it was mostly the Black Fairy part, which I think you also were mm-hmm. lukewarm to middling about. Because the B plot stuff is the stuff I wanted more of.
Agreed, 100%. Yeah, there was like the pieces that we got little nuggets of were the stuff I wanted to see entire episodes dedicated to.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, this is season 6, episode 16, Mother's Little Helper. It was directed by Billy Gearhart and it was written by the showrunners. So that's how you know that it's a plot heavy episode and the characters act badly, because that's what the showrunners do. They focus on plot and they forget the characters as people.
That actually makes a lot more sense with the Belle and Rumple dialogue.
Yeah.
That the showrunners were the ones writing this, because it was absolutely unhinged. Also, the title, ew.
Yeah, apparently it's like a reference to like a Rolling Stones song, which is what the showrunners do, is when they name episodes, they name them after like Bruce Springsteen and stuff.
I mean, I get that, but he's like a laborer in a mine. And he was stolen. So, like, I don't know about that so much. Okay, cool.
Choices.
These were choices.
Well, everybody, this episode is all about Gideon seeking Emma's help to destroy the Black Fairy in exchange for bringing Hook back from the abyss, because apparently Emma's tear as the savior is enough to lock him out of returning back. And even when the kiss, the tear is destroyed by fire, apparently that just means it's going to be like that forever. It doesn't automatically undo the block.
I don't understand it at all. I don't understand the logic at all. Because wouldn't it dry eventually?
Well, yeah. The tear of a savior has never meant anything. And I don't understand how it could all of a sudden mean so much that it's essentially the most powerful thing in Storybrooke. If it can lock someone out of returning home from other dimensions, that is some powerful magic. How did Gideon know about this? How did the Black Fairy know about this? And why is it even a thing?
It's such a powerful magic that I feel like if it were something that made any sense, honestly, it should have been like curing the dead. Like Emma sobbing over a body should be solving problems. You know what I mean? Like because I feel like if the tears of the savior are so powerful, that would also mean that they were rare.
Mm-hmm.
So like she shouldn't be crying that much. Again, I think we've had this conversation. I would be a terrible savior. Like, I would be under lock and key because someone got too close to me while I was watching Steel Magnolias. Like, we would just be, there'd be like a real nice, like, asthma commercial about a woman and her dog, and I'd be crying and be like, aha, you were under my thrall. Like, damn it, not again.
Well, we got to ask Seal to, like, make a remake, like when Elton John did the Marilyn Monroe song about Princess Di. We got to bring Seal back to do, baby, I compare you to the tears of a savior on a napkin.
So, fun fact, somewhat related but unrelated to this podcast, that song was in Batman Forever. Batman Forever was the first CD I ever owned. I've listened to that music. I've listened to that CD so many times, but obviously Kiss by a Rose. So if I get a certain kind of drunk, a very specific kind of drunk, I will absolutely tear up Kiss by a Rose in karaoke.
Why haven't we done this, Abby?
Like I said, it is a very specific kind of, like, that kind of drunk where you're, like, spunky. Like, it's just, like, when I get into, like, main character energy kind of drunk is when that will happen.
Well, we're going to have to facilitate this. At one point, I will make this happen.
Again, we can't overshoot it, or then I go up there and start singing Lose Yourself by Eminem and people leave the room. Like, it's... I am a karaoke grenade. So anyway, back on track.
Yes, back on track. Well, yeah, Gideon has enlisted Emma's help to destroy the Black Fairy. They have to open a portal so that they can go to her and destroy her, which... I feel like Emma has reservations, but then just stops having them and is going to help because of emotions from, you know, from the mommy and daddy of Gideon. But, like, I feel like they should all know this is a trap.
Mm-hmm. Like, hey, Emma, no, you do it. No, you set it up. No, you read the words on this piece of paper. No, you do all those things. I'll just sit here and audit. Like, all of this stinks so bad. Emma, where is your superhuman superhero power? What's going on?
Yeah, why doesn't she know that he's absolutely lying, that he's absolutely going to just abandon her with a spider? And Gold should know better. Gold should know better than to think that opening a portal to the Black Fairy is a good idea at all.
Right.
Out of anybody, he should be the one to say, no, that's a terrible plan. Because if you open it up even like a centimeter, she's going to sneak through. She's going to be in our world and it's going to suck for everybody. I would know. I casually name drop that she's my mom. And then everyone has a awkward but serious stare down about it.
I just love that it had such a, like, I mean, if they would have had some really serious, like, bass hits every time they changed faces, it had such a telenovela moment.
Yes,
they really should have leaned into this, because he's like, she's my mother, da 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 da. Like, they went to every face, including mm-hmm. Belle's, who, when Belle was going I've known this,
I had this fact already. My only job in this scene as Belle is to continually make excuses for my son. And also be super cool with Gold now for no reason.
Like I said, knowing that the showrunners did this makes a lot more sense, because this is on par with how they view Belle and Rumple. Mm-hmm. But the scenario in which has been set up, a child is taken, raised very quickly, in their estimations, obviously. The child was stolen on a Wednesday. He is trying to kill them by Thursday. And they're like, we can save him. We can save him. It's like, okay, logically, we know that we must throw him off the path. We must stop him from his mission before the redemption can begin. We cannot redeem him mid-mission. This would be like if we all got in our magic time machine and went back to Regina trying to start the Dark Curse. Do we think anyone would have been able to change her mind once she got really in the thick of it? I know that we know something different about Gideon at the end of this, but, like, let's be honest. Trying to, like, change someone's entire base code while they're in the midst of shenanigans, this is not the way.
No. It's not the way. And I also need to just kind of point out how disturbing it is on a fundamental level that Belle is... It seriously sounds like her son is a serial killer, but mama's little boy forever. Like, he could mass murder an entire village of people, a la the Evil Queen, and she would just be saying, oh, he's just misunderstood. Like, I get a mother's love. I get, you know, he's her son and everything. But at one point, you do need to be realistic. And she's not being realistic, but the show isn't portraying that as a bad thing.
No, I will say it's interesting because if you see the juxtaposition of, like, Snow versus Belle, where Snow accepts Emma as a full adult who has had a life and a lived experience without her, it breaks her heart. But she is just like, this is my daughter and I must get to know her. Like, she is the way that she is because of the choice that I made. Belle, on the other hand, is just like, oh, this is my son? Oh, well, when he was born, he was perfect. So he, no matter what has happened to him, even though I know some pretty troubling things about the way that he was raised, I cannot let this go. Now, I guess logically it makes sense that, again, like I said, this has been 24 hours, so that's a lot for a brain to process. But they're going hard on the, no, he is redeemable. He was perfect. He is a golden child who can do zero wrong. Like, he's half the Dark One. Are we not a little suspicious that maybe he's just bad?
She is, I just realized it. Belle is a boy mom.
Hashtag boy mom. You wouldn't understand. Snow, you wouldn't understand. My house is full of Nerf darts and so much laundry. Like, we don't play princesses. We play monster trucks. We're, like, so different.
Yeah.
Do you even know what grass stains are?
Belle is a hashtag boy mom. 100%.
Oh, the worst kind. No, my son, my little boy, no. Not Gideon. I feel like Belle would do that thing where, like, everyone doesn't call him Gideon. They would have, like, a nickname for him. They'd call him, like, I don't even know what a nickname for Gideon would be, but, like, they'd call him, like, Eon or Gid or something. They'd have, like, a shorter version, or they'd all call him by, like, his last name, or they'd all call him French. You know what I mean? It'd be like, it's because he's Gideon French. I don't think Rumpel has a last name. But she's like, yeah, he's French. But she's always referring to him by his full government name. Just constantly. It's like, who's Gideon? Oh, you're Gideon? Oh, shit. French has a first name? His name's Gideon? Oh, shit.
Gideon Rumpelstiltskin Dark Mom. Dark One Boy Mom. That's his full, boy his mom. Full Christian name. His I also love government. How... I love the juxtaposition of Snow and Belle that you mentioned, because Snow is angry mom in this whole... She glares this whole episode. All Snow does... is she didn't need to be there, but I'm glad she is, because she's just like, she's there to protect Emma. She recognizes that Gold and Belle are effing up, and she's like, I'm not here for it. You guys suck so bad, and you're doing a bad job as parents.
Honestly, I do wish it was Snow and Belle doing the throwdown, like just two moms having, like, your child is bullying my child. Not my son. Your daughter is weird. Your daughter is weird and we all know it. So maybe he's not bullying. Maybe he's just telling the truth. No, he's trying to murder her. And that is wrong. And then we got to get the principal involved. And I just assume that person's Regina. And it's like, she's biased. Like, it's just such a, like, there should have been, like, a mom fight over their kids that is so unhinged and just, like, going too hard. But you're right. Yeah, Snow is just there to, like, be there, being like, I'm here if you need me. From back here. Like, if you need me to do anything, I'm here, girl. Like, so you're not alone in the shot.
The other thing we learned, I love how we've been talking about this one scene for like 10 minutes, but I feel like it encapsulates kind of all the problems in the episode. It's just this initial showdown and the follow-up. The other thing I really had a problem with was in this scene. And that was when Gold reveals that, like, all the darkness, including the dark curse, all the evils of the world... started with the Black Fairy.
It's it really makes sense that this is the first we've heard of her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Considering that she's the end all be all the evil stems from this one woman who just seems like a put upon soccer mom with a child mind.
You're 100% correct on that. Because what's funny is that I had the hashtag boy mom thought about her, about the black fairy. just a battle of the boy moms. What drives me nuts about this, and this is what I've always said was the problem, was that Gold was always supposed to be the just like embedded baddie. Mm-hmm. And he is supposed to be this unbeatable, cursed creature that is the dark one. Which is, I mean, let's just go back to our basics here. That's such a great, like, story. It's such a great curse. In the battle and the conflicted soul of like a cowardly man embracing the darkness because he is a coward and he's hiding behind it. And he is now just like an absolute mafia lord over this area. And then, oh no, I'm good. And I'm trying to have a heart of gold. Like, but he doesn't. And I wish it would have been endgame that he was just straight up bad. But obviously we don't get that. So then what we have to do is every season ramp up how bad mm-hmm. the bad guys are, and it's never enough, and it never makes any sense, and it's always somehow related to him mm-hmm. in a way that destroys his character, which bums me out so bad, because I guess Peter Pan, I guess we could kind of get away with Peter Pan if it was just like, oh, by the way, my dad did this, and then he went off to like own, like just go to an island and be a perpetual child and own an army of children and be an absolute terror. Like, that's a one-off because he didn't raise him, and so the dark curse thing was kind of still, it happened upon him, whatever. But then being like, oh, also my mom is the spawn of darkness, like, okay, then it makes 100% sense that you are the dark one now. Yeah. Like, it's no longer like, oh, what a life, what how fates have aligned. It's a, no, this just, it all makes sense thematically, and it's actually super boring.
Yeah, it makes it boring, and it also is another way that the show removes culpability and responsibility, not only from Rumpel, but also from Gideon, because that's exactly what happens in this episode. They show a reveal that completely removes any of his responsibility for his actions. And I don't like that, and I'm annoyed. But let's continue. Let's throw ourselves into the spider's web that is this episode, which ironically, apparently all of this was supposed to happen in the woods. Like all of the... Everything was supposed to happen in the woods, not in the Sorcerer's Mansion, but they had a rain, so they had to move. I actually feel like it works better in the mansion, because I think having all the spider's webs, you know, from Spirit Halloween, having that whole battle in such a confined space, even though it didn't make any sense for the spider not to be causing any permanent damage to the rafters and the floor.
Yeah. Also missed opportunity for some Haunted Mansion lore.
Oh, that would have been cool. Like, yeah, like a picture that follows, or maybe like just a nod to the haunted whatever.
I would have loved for like, and this is just me now fan fictioning, but like, wouldn't it have been great for like Gideon to like turn it into the Haunted Mansion of like, yeah, we're running from a spider, but now you're in a room that's stretching and you're getting smaller. Hey, now you're in the room where everything's staring at you. Hey, now you're going and there's a bunch of ghosts doing this beautiful dance. Like, just really go into the Haunted Mansion situation just to, like, real psychological thriller thing for Emma, where she's like, hey, by the way, remember where you thought you were doing good magic? Because a guy did an absolute 180 and you were like, yeah, this tracks. And so now she's being chased through the Sorcerer's Mansion by Shelob. And gets fully Frodo'd. Like, I mean, it was... Full,
yeah.
Yeah. She gets all wrapped up. And then, like, the spider... I love the spider is just like, ah, come here. Just lit. I just love the animation for the spider. It was so funny to me.
It was very funny. It was clearly a lot of budget went into it, but that did make it good. My favorite shot, I think, was, and I actually accidentally paused on this shot, which is why I loved it so much, was Emma is like tied up with the spider's webs. This is after Gideon's abandoned her. And we see a close up of the spider and his eyes, and you see Emma reflected in his eyes, but it's like not a natural reflection because it's all very bad CGI. Yeah. So it almost looks like it's pasted on there, like a camera angle's put on there. But alas, so Emma agrees to help him in exchange for freeing Hook. And he's like, yeah, totally. I'll totally do that. I'm not going to betray you. Why would I do that? Let's go. And they head to the Sorcerer's Mansion because there's a door there and they're going to use it as a portal or blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, and then he has her handsome hero. They talk about that for a moment. They have a spell book that had Lorem Ipsum in it, which I thought was very funny. Because that shows whenever there's Lorem Ipsum, which is the fill-in text that makes no sense, that's how you know the props department doesn't give a shit about the episode. And then, oh no, the spider from her handsome hero comes into play, and then it starts attacking them and shooting webs, and Gideon abandons her and is like, ha ha ha, this is my plan all along. Now you're going to die. I won't stay to watch.
I'm going to steal your sword, though.
Yeah, I'm going to take the sword. I'm going to go. The spider's tote's going to kill you. And then the spider, like, coats her in webs. Yep. In the span of, like, 2 seconds. And then milks it for all it's worth. And is, yeah, does the thing you're mentioning where it's like, come here.
Come here. You're going to come over here. It's tickle time. He's like, no.
And she kind of dies. Maybe. Or stops breathing.
She dies. It's a very, like, okay, if anyone doesn't want spoilers for, like, the last part of the sucky part of Game of Thrones, close your ears for, like, 5 seconds. It's a Jon Snow moment where she dies but doesn't die. Like, she dies, but just enough for, like, curses to be technically correct, and then comes back. I will say, again, quoting Shelob, Shelob in Lord of the Rings does fully pierce Frodo. Like, mm-hmm. It's a, hey, here's the poison, because that's what spiders do. They wrap them up in the web, they give them, they put some kind of, I don't know if it's like a venom, I don't know what you technically call it, and then that basically digests what they have caught in the web, which mm-hmm. is basically what was happening to Frodo. And then they eat that. Like, they digest stuff outside of their bodies, and then they take it in. None of that happens to Emma. Like, this is just me being a pedantic piece of shit. But basically, it's just like, the logic here is that the web is killing her, I guess. Sure, whatever. So, yeah, she kind of dies for a quick second. But guess who comes to save her, Beth? Who comes to save her?
It's Rumpelstiltskin.
Yay. Because he knew something was rotten in Denmark. Yay.
Yeah, and he and Emma and Gideon have all the same powers against the spider, which is just like a beam, but in slightly different colors. Yeah. Rumpel's is purple. Obviously. Emma's white. And Gideon, who has it for some reason that I don't understand, because it's never explained why he has this magic, it's like off-white. And I'm like, I don't understand why he has savior-esque magic. Is it because his dad is the Dark One? Is it like hereditary? Did the Black Fairy teach him? Like, he just has the same magic, the generic magic that we've seen from everybody so far, like recently. Yeah. It didn't make sense.
Boring. It's boring and doesn't make any sense, and they never explain it.
Nope. But what they do explain is Gideon's backstory. Yay. And it's so interesting, and it's not at all a letdown.
No.
Do you want to take us into the dark realm?
So I'll kind of go through it. I'm not going to So what bothers me about the backstory, and I'll just say this up top, is that I thought it was leading in a completely different way. And then it was the exact thing that they were saying that it was, which was a bummer. Like, I was just really hoping for a bait and switch, which would have been great. So basically, we come to the Black Fairy marching into the mines with a baby. And she's like, here you go. I brought a new child for the mines, Which,
well, no, not for the mines.
Well, not for different. The mines. I'm sorry, not for the mines. This one's special. I want you to treat it like it's my child. And she's like, wow, this is so great. And she's like, what's this book? Oh, this book sucks. But then the book still stays with him, like, to the point where he knows about it. And she's like, you will raise this child as if it were mine. And the woman standing in the mines is like, absolutely. I'm super good at raising babies. Because you know what babies like. No light and bad breathing. So,
before we continue, I kind of want to talk about this scenario that they've given the Black Fairy, because she's the final boss for this main iteration of Once Upon a Time before we get to the half season reboot that we get later on. So, do you feel like this is, I mean, not that it's not bad, because it's bad. Child labor.
Bad.
I'm against child labor. It's a bad thing. But when you compare it to, for example, the underworld, eternity suffering in a bad version of Storybrooke with smokestacks, or Rumple's dad, who also trapped children and gave them horrible nightmares and put them in this nightmare world where they could never escape. Like, having a couple kids, like 10 kids with miner's hats in a mine, like, it's just doesn't have the same gravitas.
I don't think we saw enough of how, like, they talk about it where it's like, oh, the Black Fairy, she can come here long enough to steal a child and then, like, trap them. But she is all the evil. Okay, if she's all the evil, why is she just playing my, like, the Timu version of Regina? Which is what this is.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, I don't get evil from her. I just get kind of a dick. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
She just kind of sucks. And, like, I'm not afraid of her. Like, Regina, there's a point where you don't know. Like, you're like, oh, well, this is, like, when she's the evil queen, you're never quite sure if she's going to actually murder a bunch of people. Or, like, kill the children. Like, she might, like, you don't know, like, especially in the height of her evilness. And yeah, Peter Pan said, like, just really, like, sick in the head, that whole thing. Black Fairy just kind of bleh, bleh. So,
like, let's compare her big bad thing she does in this episode to, like, basically what happens in the end is that she turns a kid into a bug, like a young man. Not a child, like a teenager.
I'm sorry. Hold. No.
A 27-year-old.
a fully grown, almost 30-year-old man. That blew me away when I looked at the wiki where they're like, Gideon, now 28. He was supposed to be 28 when this happened? Holy crap.
And he turns a man into a bug and squashes him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big bad thing that happens in this episode as part of her test. Regina trapped two children in a never-ending forest to fend for themselves until they died. Rumple turned a child's parents into eternal living suffering dolls that were locked in a prison inside their own bodies for eternity. We also had Sydney getting trapped behind a mirror for all eternity.
Rumple turned Belle's suitor, Gaston, into a rose and then let her cut him in half.
Mm-hmm. And then pretty much all the other myriad of things that villains have done throughout the series. This is a one-off villain. This is a Bo Peep moment. I'm sorry, Bo Peep was more intimidating than the Black Fairy.
Yeah.
And I think that they tried to, like, in a sense, like, use children as a way to, like, make her more bad. Like, oh, she's worse because she's doing it to kids. And I'm like, that doesn't, yeah, that's awful, but that's not gonna cut it. Like, you need to actually put in the work to make the Black Fairy the villain you need us to see her as.
Okay, so this isn't really a fully formed thought, so, like, help me out here a little bit. One of the other problems I have with the Black Fairy And we're just barreling through this whole thing because we're not going to explain it because it just sucks. One of the problems I have with Once Upon a Time is that a lot of the times almost every time, they're just like, what if a woman was a villain, but she was conventionally attractive? Like, they're like, oh my gosh, what if she was so unbelievably hot? And, like, listen, it works for Regina because Regina has that kind of, like, attractiveness where it's also kind of, like, intimidating. Where you're like, wow, I'm afraid of how attracted I am. Like, there's people who are, like, attractive in a way that makes you afraid of them. And again, she is a beautiful woman. This is nothing against the woman that plays the Black Fairy. I should have brought it up because she's very beautiful, but it is not an intimidating beautiful. I hope I'm explaining this correctly. Like, I'm not trying to, like, dunk on her or anything, but, like, it is not the kind of essence, aura, that you should be getting from somebody who is trapping children in mines and is the living, breathing embodiment of all darkness and the mother of all awfulness. You know what I mean?
Yeah, she shouldn't just be like a gorgeous woman in black sequins with feathers in her hair or whatever she has. Like, she looks gorgeous, but she doesn't look like the end all be all of evil. And I do want to be fair, like, Jamie Murray, who plays the Black Fairy, she's trying. I think she's a fine actress and she's been in other stuff. I think she's good. I just don't think the part they wrote is enough for what they need it to be. And her performance isn't enough to elevate it beyond the limited material and potential they've given her.
Correct. Because obviously they're trying to do a lot with her character and it doesn't really pay off because a lot of times, and I texted you about this, she says dearie a lot as if to indicate to us this is where Rumple got it from, and it doesn't work.
No. I hated every time it was used. I rolled my eyes.
This was like when August was saying papa to Rumple. I was like, no.
As a 40-year-old man.
Papa. It's me, Pop. Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, she was saying dearie doesn't work. So basically the whole thing, our backstory of Gideon is that Gideon is taken to the mines. He is raised to be like, in disgusting reference to the title of the show, Mommy's Little Helper. Basically, we get to see a scene that we've seen before where he's defiant to the Black Fairy. And she's like, fine, you're so defiant. Well, I will go torture this child and you can come help him if you feel like being a hero. You want to be a hero? Fine, come save him. And Gideon, a child, is too afraid to do so. This is all very cookie cutter. Mm-hmm. This is a child being tortured. It's not fun to watch. It's all very textbook. Kind of like, this is how we torture a child. We put them in a no-win scenario, and then we laugh at them. Okay, cool. Awesome. We got this going on. Cut to them being all almost 30, which, just point of contention, I feel like the Black Fairy would definitely be murdering children at about 19.
Yeah.
Right before their brains fully form. Like, right before their brains fully fuse together and they become, like, adults. She's like, oh, time to die. Like, unless she has a bunch of, like, 40-year-old men in her thrall doing the accounting for her mines. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, where are these people? Anyway, we then have Gideon, like, is, like, in charge of, like, the child. I like the wiki goes between calling them slaves and laborers. They're just like, they're laborers. The slaves, the laborers. It's like, you got to pick a lane. Which one are you doing? And then one guy's like, Gideon, it's me, the child that was tortured with an earshot. First of all, if she were really super bad, this would not be enough information to identify this person. I feel like that would have been happening on an almost nightly basis.
Yeah. Like, I also feel like he would have been broken at that point.
Oh, fully broken. So here's the deal. What I thought, because I forgot how this episode went, honest to God. What I thought was happening was that he was a plant. And that he was tricking and testing Gideon. That's what I thought the test was. Was like, aha, I'm not actually that kid. That kid died back when it happened. Like, that kid got fully murdered. Like, I was giving you hope that he was alive. How dare you? How dare you have hope about any of those things. I'm just a guy. You know, she hired me or whatever. But what it actually is he's like, no, there's a savior. You can get her powers and she can take down the Black Fairy. Let's go find her. There's an orb. It's in the thing. Let's go find the orb. So they go and they find the orb. And then the Black Fairy shows up and she's like, aha, you've fallen right into my plans. Again, very Rumple move. I don't think he fell into any plans. I think she's just like, I'm going back to my room. Son of a bitch. They're here stealing my orb. And she's like, no, you can't do that. So she turns the boy into a bug. And she's like, dude, you can't stop me. I'm going to do this. Smushes the bug. Gideon is like, no, I will defeat you. You can't stop me. I am a hero. I am good. So she takes his heart. And she's like, you will find this savior and destroy him. So all of this, all of that to get to. Gideon is not actually in any control of his faculties. He is not actually bad. He is a hero through and through. And everything that he has done currently is at the thrall of the Black Fairy because she has his heart. So.
Yay.
Don't you all feel stupid? How dare you? You were doubting Rumple and Belle and their beautiful, perfect son. But no, it's someone else's fault.
It's a woman's fault. Of course, yeah, it's a woman's fault. It's this mommy's woman, fault.
Damn this woman you'll never see again. What a bitch.
Well, two quick notes before we move on to the fun stuff in the episode. One, the background extras who played her security guards in the confrontation scene were hilarious because their costumes were terrible. They looked like little soldiers in like a bad iteration of like 1984.
Yeah.
Or like in like a Spy Kids movie and you have like the evil Spy Kid henchmen or something. That's what they looked like. Little page boy caps with their little coats and they're like, I'm an evil security guard for the Black Fairy. And I'm also 14.
There was never any like cohesiveness with any of the costuming for the Black Fairy stuff in the Dark Realm. It didn't make any sense. None of it made any sense. None of it looked right. I doubt that the chamber in which they get stuff from the Black Fairy doesn't even look like somewhere she would like live.
Like, yeah.
I mean, but I had the same complaint kind of about Regina. Like, I like Regina's tower and where she like sits and wanders around, but I'm like, you don't live here. Like, this is like your salon. This is not like where your bedroom is. Like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, I wish more places, like, I wish when they designed sets more, it'd be like, yeah, this is the lived space of an evil person. It never is. It's no. Never correct.
Where do you hang your head? And then the other thing I wanted to point out was just a question that I kind of want to get your thoughts on. Why did she keep the name Gideon?
See, I would say if it were good writing, this is me just being mean, but if this were good writing, I would say it was arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it was an arrogant thing of being like, oh no, that this is what she wanted to name it. That's fine. That can be your name. This is the name that was given to you. Or you could say something like, names are powerful. It was the name that was bestowed upon you by your birth mother. Like, it's a powerful piece of your magic, like blah, blah, blah. It's not what it is. It's just laziness.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to turn, because there would have had to have been a whole side plot where like he was introduced and he was like, hello, it's me, Trevor, or whatever weird name. I don't know. It's not why that was my first name. But just, you know, be like, oh, his name is actually like, this book was left with me. And she's like, oh my God, it's actually you. It's Gideon. Again, way more compelling. That would have been much more compelling than, hey, it's me, it's Gideon. Like immediately after him being lost.
Yeah, and on a little addendum, I know I said one more, but I'm going to throw in another one. If she kidnapped him when he was a baby, he's a little infant. He doesn't know shit about shit. He's like, he is perfectly able to be molded however she sees fit. Much like if you think about Tangled, when Mother Gothel took Rapunzel. She raised her as her own, and that's the life she knew, and she loved her mother and was dedicated to her mother. I don't understand why the Black Fairy didn't like coddle him, give him his own room, like spoil him rotten, like to mold him into that perfect instrument that she needed to enact her plan. Like, why was she locking him in a dungeon with all the other common slave laborer children?
I thought about that too, because you're right. She should have been like raising him like a little prince.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he should have been like, if she wanted him to be the nightmare that he was, that she wanted him to be, she would have been fully leaning into hashtag boy mom. Like, honestly, if she wanted the perfect son to be a toxic little shithead, she could have just let Belle raise him on her own.
Just bring Belle into the nightmare realm and let her do her thing.
Just let her do her thing. But honestly, like, also, like, it doesn't make sense that Gideon is the way that he is after this much torture at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
Like, psychologically, none of it makes sense in any stretch of the imagination. I get that we're supposed to be putting some of it aside and that we're supposed to be believing that you are good, you know, in your core, that nothing can overwrite that. Like, the showrunners have a very interesting take on nature versus nurture. That they're trying to display, but doing a very not spectacular job of.
It is not quite working, and I have a feeling, a little inclination, it's not going to get better.
No.
But at least we have some other B, C, D plots to distract us for a little bit, and these I actually enjoyed. And why don't we start with Hook? He is on his side quest. He is trying to find his way back home, unknowing, unbeknownst to him, that a single tear on a napkin from Aesop's tables is preventing him from returning home, presumably forever.
Damn it. My girlfriend cried at a bar and now I can't go home. Yeah, been there, buddy.
Closing time.
Yeah, exactly. Hook is trying to find his way, figure out where he's at. He's trying to find his way home. So he does what any good pirate will do. He finds the nearest tavern. He's mm-hmm. like, I will find my answers where there is beer flowing. Gets there and finds, Blackbeard just absolutely serving every kind of look. Like, it was just like, why this? Why is this what we went so, just like, I'm just like, this episode's fine. Then, like, also, by the way, Blackbeard's hot now. He's like, what the
So, Abby, I want you to do me a little favor. Do you have a computer or a phone nearby?
I have my phone.
Okay, I want you to look up the actor. His name is Charles.
Okay.
And his last...
Charles.
And then last name, M-E-S-U-R-E. I just want you to take a look at this guy without the black beard, because this man is a very attractive man.
Okay, so there is a lot of very confusing photos that first come up. He is a British-Australian actor, which I, like, you know what, first of all, amazing. First of all, one of these photos, he fully looks like peak Johnny Depp. Like, he's got the mustache, like, it fully works. Like, because a number of times, by the way, in this episode, you could tell it was very much channeling Jack Sparrow.
Mm-hmm.
This photo, he looks like the Golden Bachelor, which I'm not as into. But he looks like a cross between, again, I do find him attractive. I'm about to say something that doesn't sound as attractive to certain people, I would say. Somewhere between Bradley Cooper and then, Aaron, I've got to figure out his name. He was an X-Men, I think. No, maybe he was Kick-Ass. Taylor Johnson. Okay, so if Aaron Taylor Johnson and Bradley Cooper ran at each other really quickly and then tried to look like Johnny Depp, it would be this actor.
Yeah, I mean, and you're right about the Johnny Depp, Jack Sparrow-ness of it all, definitely leaning into that, but I didn't have a problem with it because, like,
no,
I wanted these guys to have a fucking spinoff.
Yeah. Like, this would have been great.
I legit, when he knocked out Hook and ran to the boat, I was legit upset because I'm like, I need these two to be together this whole time. Blackbeard's coming back to Storybrooke and we're going to have a party.
I want them to be go back to Storybrooke and be the police. I want them to solve crimes. I want to watch NCIS pirate crime.
Like, I want Blackbeard to be at Hook's wedding.
Right? He's got the oh my God. Okay, so Blackbeard is the ring bearer. And when they reach for him, they do the pretty woman thing where he boop. Like, because it's in an actual clam, and he's like, whoop. Oh,
and he thought I stole it, but it's behind your ear.
And he gives him the rings and then runs for the hills like he doesn't stay. He's like, I have to go. Listen, I love them together. I think they were both like having a blast.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So Hook goes into this tavern and he's like, hey, you need a ship? Good news. I will give you my ship if you beat me in cards. And Blackbeard's like, step up to the table, sir. Let's absolutely play for this. Because Hook is trying to play for a magic bean. Mm. And again, early in the show, magic beans, impossible to find. It's a very rare. Changing realms, impossible to do. Now it's a, hey, jackass, I know you probably have a gold, or you have a bean. I want the bean. Let's play poker. Let's play
it's
dice.
It's literally in his hat.
Yeah. Oh, I have it right here. And so they sit down to play. Blackbeard wins. They go outside. And then my favorite exchange of the whole thing. Oh, I'm so sorry. My ship's actually not here. So sorry. But I'm going to need that bean to get us to the ship. And then Blackbeard's like, I can't believe you would do this to me. You lied to me. And it's like, you had 6 aces in your deck. Shut up. Like, you're such a liar. And so then he throws the bean and they jump in. Again, this is one of those moments where I just think, could you imagine? You're just like on the docks. You're just a guy who's like collecting barrels of fish. Your whole job. You're a dock worker and you're just hauling fish. And you see these two just eccentric pirates of legend make a portal. How are there not like 2 or 3 people jumping in after them? If I saw that, I'd be like, I don't know where they're going, but I want to go. Like, just YOLO it. Like, this is your moment. Like, do it so you can never say you didn't do it.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be like, hey, Blackbeard and Hook has arrived. Also, Abby's here. Like, why? Like, it's like, hey, guys, it just looks really fun. It's just, sure, where are we going? Are we going?
I felt like being part of the moment.
I wanted to be part of it. Again, like I said, I would be a certain kind of drunk and having that main girl, main character energy. It was just like, let's go. You guys want to carry on?
I'll compare you to a bean and a portal.
I land in the underworld and they're just like, man, what'd you do to die? Oh, I sang Kiss by a Rose 600 times and then Blackbeard shot me in the head. So honestly, worth it. So they go to Storybrooke, but as they jump into the portal is when we get the reveal that the savior tier will block him. Because even though Regina later says that the barrier spell has been lifted, Hook can no longer get to the continental United States.
For reasons. That makes sense.
Don't ask a lot of questions. He just can't make it. So obviously the curse bounces him because it's like, well, he can't make it back to Storybrooke. I thought they were going to put him in Boston. Because first of all, how absolutely hilarious would it have been for Hook and Blackbeard to go to Boston?
Oh my God.
10 out of 10, hysterical.
And they have to like get a boat and it's like one of those reenactment boats from the Boston Tea Party.
Oh my God, they
just
fully steal like a 1700s like warsh. The one they have docked that they have, the reenactors are on and they're just like, no, this is actually, it's just, again, a guy named Trevor who's just like, this boat doesn't actually go. Do you want to go to Mike's and get a cannoli or like what? The line should be super short right now. The tourists all went home. So instead it bounces them to Neverland where all of the Lost Boys who stayed behind are still there. And this was a rare moment of show don't tell, because it was all the information we get is these are the lost boys who didn't go home. They'd elected to stay here. And what they're saying is these are a bunch of absolute psychopaths.
Yeah.
The bad ones stayed. And so they start chasing them. And basically Blackbeard clocks the back of Hook and steals the one canoe to make it out. And Hook has to dart to stage left to escape the psycho lost boys.
But not before they have the most well-projected argument across the seven seas.
Oh my God, it's so great. It's like, no way either of you. First of all, neither of them, I would believe, as a person who is a health and safety professional, who knows that these two gentlemen have been standing on ship decks with cannons their entire adult lives. Neither of them can hear shit. They are almost fully legally deaf. 100%.
It was one of those things where logically it makes negative sense.
Correct.
But I didn't mind because no. It was really fun and they were having a great time.
Everything about that exchange is camp.
Yes.
Like that is good old fashioned. Like this is what it should be. It should be kind of absurd. It should be like, this is what Once Upon a Time is great for in these moments. And they do it on accident every time. Or they're doing it because they just think it would be kind of funny and no one would notice. But it's the only thing I could notice. Like, yeah, do this more!
I kind of wonder if it was like improvised partially or something. Like how much of it was written versus improv, because it had a very natural feel and it relied a lot on the actor's chemistry. And apparently like the two of them like stayed in touch. They have like a good relationship and they send each other birthday wishes on Instagram and stuff like that. So like go Blackbeard and Hook. You guys are BFFs and I live for it.
It's a British Australian actor and his best Irish friend. Like that's the perfect
spin.
I don't know
spin
why that's
off.
I just love this. But also it did seem like, just to carry off of what you just said, but it did seem like an idea the two of them had while it was happening. What if he was way far away? And they were just like, absolutely, let's shoot it like that. It's actually hysterical. So anyway, so that's how we leave that. Hook is on the run from the Psycho Lost Boys, and Blackbeard's made a run for it in a canoe. Again, very close to a Lord of the Rings moment. I have to go alone. Of course you do, but I'm coming with you. So then we cut to Regina and her hashtag boy time, boy mom moments.
And yes, so she is in her vault trying to create an antidote for the sleeping curse for Charming and Snow, because they're, I'm guessing, nearing done their paternity leave, so they can come back to the show for at least a few more episodes before the season is out. But doesn't take long for things to take a turn. Something happens.
Well, yeah, because the evil queen made a curse so good. Because Regina is her own worst enemy in every sense of the word. She cannot undo this because she's so good at what she does, which is such a fun, humble brag. Ah, I wish I were worse at this, but no, I'm so good. Even I can't beat myself. So then she's just like, Henry, can you go to Emma's shed? Does she say the vault or does she say Emma's shed? I'm trying to remember.
I legit can't remember. I just know that she was asking him for like Eye of Newt and like specific like not Tail of Newt or whatever.
She was saying like Tongue of Newt, not Eye of Newt, because I think Eye of Newt is the traditional. And she was like, no, that's stereotypical. I'm not like other witches. I need a different thing. But she's just, I feel like she said it was like Emma's shed or garage, because I remember clocking that as being like odd. I'm like, why would those things be in there? It doesn't matter. And he's like, yeah, absolutely, Mom. I will take a list. So I'm going to write it down in this piece of paper with this random pen. And his eyes roll into the back of his head. And he starts writing runes all over this piece of paper. Props to Regina for reacting the correct way. I was worried it was going to be weird. But she was just like, I don't remember what I was doing anymore. Henry? 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 What's happening? Henry? Hello? Because he just writes a bunch of weird stuff.
Yeah, I thought this was well done. I thought it was well acted. I thought the stakes were raised. And I like that they're bringing back the whole authorness of Henry, which they've done very inconsistently. But I like that in this final battle, he's playing a part. And I really like that. And it also gives an excuse to bring back Isaac!
I love this. I love this because the idea that he is just like in a room. They go find him. He's in the ward.
The prison ward.
The grippy sock vacation that never ends. And he's just like in the room. He's like, oh, thank God you're here. And he's just like, finally, you've made it. What seems to be the problem? He's like, oh, I know exactly what that is, but I'm not going to tell you. And when I tell you that the line that he says after this for his demands threw me for a loop, I fully paused the episode to Google the dates of the episode. Because he was like, I want a car. I want like an apartment and I want tickets to Hamilton. And for some reason, him dropping the name Hamilton blew my mind. I don't remember this reference.
You didn't?
At all. Like, I was like, when did this show come out? Like, I forgot how, I don't know. I guess it's just like, it took me a second because obviously Hamilton was a powerhouse before. And then in 2020, they released it on Disney Plus. And then an entire different surge of Hamilton-ness happened.
Mm-hmm.
So when he was like, I want tickets to Hamilton. And in my brain, the show is set in 2011. Everything in my brain just stopped for a second. I'm like, wait, did Isaac predict Hamilton?
That's actually a really good point because the show is stuck in the past. So Hamilton wouldn't necessarily, like, it hasn't been 4 years since, like, it's only been a couple years of the show. That's why they have old phones. So, like, I understand, you know, it's a fun joke. It's a cute little reference. Hee hee ha ha, Hamilton. Because this is when, you know, it was really hard to get tickets to Hamilton. Like,
yeah.
Tim and I once won the $10 lottery. And we got to go. And there was a father and daughter sitting right next to us who had won the lottery in Colorado and literally bought tickets to fly across the country because his daughter loves theater so much. Like, it was a big thing. And this was like,
that's crazy.
This was like 2018, 2019 or something like that. It was still like before pandemic, it was still the hot thing. But yeah, I didn't even really think about that, how it kind of might break the timeline a little bit. Damn you, yeah. Hamilton.
Yeah, it says season one likely takes place in 2011. Yeah, so it's...
I don't think they're caught up to 2016 by the time that this takes place.
I doubt it. I mean, there's a couple of time jumps, but they're like 3 months at a time. So, like, a lot has been happening. Again, the timeline is hysterical.
I just love the idea that Isaac exists in a time outside of everyone else because he spent so long as the author and hopped from reality to reality and shaped things as he saw fit. So when he's talking about Hamilton, no one else knows what he's talking about. And that's why Regina like never addresses it. And
okay. I like that idea.
I'm going to headcanon it that he knows about Hamilton, but no one else does.
Ooh. New theory. Okay. Henry, in an alternate timeline, is the one that helps write Hamilton as the author because he is writing, he decides that he wants to write about history, but in a cool, funky new way. He like, it's Lin-Manuel Miranda and also Henry Mills.
Henry from Once Upon a Time. Okay. I love it. Yes. But yeah, so Isaac agrees to help them, and well, first they refuse to give him what he wants, and he's like, okay, fine, just to let you know, it's going to get worse for Henry, and I'll tell you a tiny bit more if you get me all the stuff. And he gets a van, not a sports car, and no Hamilton tickets, but he does get to leave, and his license plate was a nod to Walt Disney.
I did see that. Yes, I like that. Yeah. I looked it up because I was like, if this is another Lost reference, I'm going to freak out.
And the last thing that Isaac reveals is that they are at the end of the book. And that's why Henry's author powers are coming back out, because we're reaching the end of the story. And it's, you should leave town because it's going to get really bad. And it's a really big deal. And we've never heard this before. We've never heard the savior facing something like she's never faced before. I don't think this has ever happened.
No, no. We've never had an end of the world. Everyone's about to die. Powers that are unexplained and manifesting in strange, crazy ways. Like, none of this has ever happened. It's all been fine up until this point. So, really, our characters are really, really out of their depths right now.
Mm-hmm. We're at the end of the book. Blank pages. Who knows what's going to happen?
And everybody knows that when you get to the end of a book, everyone dies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just like the end and the characters are all suddenly dead. They have all been, it says the end, period. Everyone's wiped from the face of the earth. The end.
But don't worry, we're going to get a musical.
I do love, oh my God, it's so close. I do love the idea, like, again, I wish we would have been pushing the author thing a little bit. But I also like the idea that rebelling against his author powers is having a consequence.
Yeah.
Of being like, hey, this is a powerful magic that has existed for eons. And you do not just get to resign because you have passed it on to no one. If you don't pass it to somebody, it's just living inside of you, corrupting.
Mm-hmm.
I love this. Again, more just this weird side story that I wish we had so much more information and lore about.
Yeah, it's like when your subconscious is like trying to push you to recognize something, or like sleepwalking, things like that. Like, you know, what is in the dark will come to the light and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, that was season 6, episode 16, Mother's Little Helper. And we end with, oh, I forgot to mention, by the way, the Black Fairy's here now. Yay.
Oh, yeah. By the way, yeah, he shows up because she took his heart. She took his heart and he's in control. And so then he takes a sword and he cuts a fabric of time. Mm-hmm. And Emma died just enough.
Yeah. But he was like, you failed, Mother. You failed. The spell ended and you're not here. And then she's like, you want to bet? Boom, I'm here in my black sequins. She looked beautiful. She looked incredible.
She looked stunning.
Yeah. This is an actress who I don't think you could put her in bad lighting.
No. I think she's the kind of woman that goes to Walmart and looks amazing.
Yeah.
You know, like overhead harsh lighting and she's just like, oh, and you're like, oh my God, I can't look directly at you. You're so stunning. What's going on?
It's like you're walking around with your own floating ring light. How did this happen?
Exactly. How did you do that? She's like, oh, I didn't even put any makeup. You're not wearing makeup?
Get out.
Get out. I can't look at you. I can't stand near too close to you. I can't even. I'm so upset.
So I think we've said just about everything that needs to be said about this episode. There's some fun little things that happen in it. There's some cool world building. I like the Hook and Blackbeard stuff. I like the Henry and Regina stuff. I liked Snow standing up for her daughter. I did like Emma at the end of the episode being very firm to Rumple and being like, it doesn't matter. Your son needs to take responsibility for his actions, even though we all know that his heart was ripped out, so it doesn't matter anyway. And she tells him, like, you know, he's tried to kill me twice. I've kind of hit my limit. Goodbye. And Rumple, being an idiot, is like, I will stop you. And Belle, being a double idiot, is like, I'll hold your hand during this. and nothing
sorry
is learned.
My son's trying to murder you, but I mean, maybe he has his reasons.
Yeah, he might have had a bad day.
Yeah, like, have you ever thought about how your actions affect him?
Any God, closing
I could
thoughts,
be
Abby?
So I could I be so evil if I wanted to be. Like, it's oh. so upsetting.
Oh yeah, just guys, do us a favor. Avoid the boy mom TikToks. Save yourself.
Yeah, save yourself. Don't it's take bad. The psychic damage. Go watch something cute instead. Watch something fun. Go see, like, there's so many, like, baby. There's a new baby elephant at the Columbus Zoo, and he's so small.
Oh, my God.
And he's so tiny, and he's just, like, walking around, and you're just like, where are you going? You look so official. Do you have a job, sir? He's so cute.
Abby, any closing thoughts before we wrap this up?
Nope, just about that baby elephant. It's great.
Well, everybody, thank you so much for joining us for this latest episode of Once Upon a Timing. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get those podcasts. You can join our Facebook group. That's at facebook.com/group/OUA Timing. You could join us on Patreon and join our wonderful family of Patreon supporters, especially our Swan Queens. And this week's Swan Queen Patreon shout out goes to Patrick Stevens. Thank you so much, Patrick.
Let's go, Patrick.
Woo! If you want to join our wonderful, wonderful family, especially as we get into the end of this series and what lies beyond, that's at patreon.com/OUA Timing. We want to thank you again for joining us for this latest episode. We will be back next time with Season 6, Episode 17, Awake. And will we be awake for this, Abby? I'm not sure, because right now, this whole Black Fairy thing kind of putting me to sleep.
Kind of a snooze.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And, Abby, we'll see you next week.
See you next week.